Perfect. Okay. Well, hopefully this is a super interesting side of the presentation, because I know everybody's desperate to know what the legal position is vis-a-vis blockchain. Just to give you an indication of the level of optimism in the market surrounding the growth of blockchain technology, World Economic Forum survey report predicted that by 2025, a mere 7 years from now, that 10% of global GDP will be stored on a blockchain or other similar digital ledger technology. So there are, at this point in time, three various types of blockchain or blockchains themselves. There's public, there's enterprise, and consortium. On the public blockchain, this is an internet protocol that manages the distribution of provably unique data that acts as a unit of account for transactions on that ledger. The transactions are immutable. They cannot be unwound. They cannot be reversed unless you do a subsequent block, but you cannot go simply onto the system and erase the information. It is there for good. It is an open source protocol. You can actually, anybody who has any sort of tech savvy can go and investigate the protocols. They are available for inspection. It's no secret, bearing in mind that blockchain came to the fore together with Bitcoin at the end of 2008, 2000, and the beginning of 2009. So the technology is actually relatively old, given the growth space and the things that have happened, which is, I think, would also explain why some of the technological advancements now are actually running ahead of what the blockchain can actually do. It enables innovation, so you can have side chains and scripting. It's very easy to audit because there is a hash function, and the hash function effectively is because each block contains or includes the hash of the previous block, and that then gets carried forward. So it's completely immutable. You cannot go back and reverse your transactions. And the other important thing in terms of auditing is that it is encrypted. There is a timestamp, together with proof of work, which is effectively what the computing power is of all the nodes in the network. And it contains a summary of the transaction. So right now, the incentives are that for early adopters and for developers to use and to support and verify the ledger without the need for a trusted third party or intermediary. So this is true decentralization and true disintermediation. It contains authenticated and verification technology, authentication technology. It's claimed to be less open to corruption because of the global distribution of the nodes. How difficult is it to, in terms of your 51% consensus, how difficult is it to corrupt 51% of the network? It's borderless, as mentioned, I think, previously as well, frictionless in terms of times and costs, I think, comparatively speaking, in terms of transaction costs, as well as time to settle. There's anonymity. And this is the most blockchain, Bitcoin is the first use case for blockchain, and it's known, obviously, for the application of money transfer and payments within the blockchain system. It prevents the double spend, and this was a problem, I think Carl alluded to it in his discussion, with regards to digital assets and the ability to replicate. So the double spend here is solved by the proof of work validation system, which disallows the electronic unit of value to be copied. Examples here of your public blockchains: Bitcoin, Ethereum, Google, and Amazon. So we look at enterprise blockchains. This is now a private blockchain. It's consensus-driven, obviously, via trusted intermediaries who are identified. The network is permissioned, so you have nodes that are identifiable. These are the miners, effectively. They are identifiable and can be determined at any single point in time. A digital currency for this is not necessary or required. And it offers solutions to persons that want to use cryptographic databases managed and stored by trusted third parties and intermediaries. The data subject identities are, however, disclosed, so there is reduced privacy. And examples of these enterprise blockchains is Ripple, this chain is Hyperledger, Oracle, and IBM. The consortium blockchain is a hybrid of the two. It is built on the public blockchain architecture, and it's partially decentralized. So it provides the technology for permissioned networks. So the example that I've given here is that you have 10 financial institutions that jointly operate blockchain, and each controls a node, but at least 8 financial institutions are required to sign a block in order for the block to be valid. And then the right to read the transaction data may be public or private, so that can be permissioned on a case-by-case basis. So the role players in the regulation side, these are the usual suspects. FIC, particularly, I think would have a vested interest, National Credit Act, as a credit regulator. SARS, wherever there's money to be made, SARS has a nose. Straight, any of the other CSDs, JSC, the commissioner at SIPC, and the FECA, previously the FSB. So, turning to regulation. One of the biggest issues that we face in terms of blockchain technology and contracting via the blockchain is determining the jurisdiction. So where in actual fact does your contract take place? What are the governing laws governing or surrounding your contract? Technically speaking, because the nodes are globally situated, you could have, once consensus has been reached, you can actually have the applicability of all laws. So you have a multi-jurisdictional, potential multi-jurisdictional claim in respect of the governing law of the agreement. Issues of offer and acceptance. We have a very particular contract law that determines when an offer is made and when acceptance is received. That varies from jurisdiction to jurisdiction, so these are issues that you need to just bear in mind, particularly when contracting on a public blockchain. Again, the time to verify and authenticate is also something that's really important that will help you determine the offer and acceptance. The longer the time to verify and authenticate, the greater the risk your transaction is at in terms of any sort of fraudulent type activity. That's potentially where it can be hacked. Can you rely on issues of ostensible authority? Well, in some countries, they don't recognize ostensible authority of the parties contracting, and so how do you know that you have a valid contract in the first instance? We have DAOs, which are your decentralized autonomous organizations. These are particularly popular in the smart contracts on the Ethereum blockchain. They automatically execute the smart contracts, but they have no legal persona. They run on predetermined script. There's a protocol for them to act. They automate the entire process. And so what happens if something goes wrong? What status does a DAO have? The enforcement of rights is clearly one of the contractual issues that you want to bear in mind. Obviously, if something goes wrong, who do you sue? Where do you sue? Under what laws? What happens if you have a conflict of laws? Which law then prevails? Do you actually even have a contract in the first instance? Confidentiality is another thing. This doesn't work in terms of an open blockchain where you can have your banker client confidentiality blown because it's obviously available for determination by all of the nodes on the network. And I've mentioned the banker client duty of care. So, turning to regulation, the SARB has now finally confirmed that the cryptocurrency is a cyber token and it's not legal tender. So merchants are not obliged to accept it from you. Institutions, if I can call them that, like Takealot, however, will accept your Bitcoin. Payments made via cryptocurrency may not be considered to discharge your monetary obligations because it's not recognized as money. So if historically you have paid for something in Bitcoin or in Ethereum or any of the other Litecoin, the person receiving the coins, can say that they have not actually been paid. You have not discharged your monetary obligations. So we're waiting for a raft of litigation to arise in this regard. Income Tax Act, sorry guys, it's an intangible asset. It's going to be taxed in the ordinary course. You need to include it in your income tax returns. The Currency and Exchanges Act, this also regulates, this goes to the ExCon regulations, this talks to capital outflows, they're regulated for purposes of the balance of payments. You can utilize your annual single discretionary allowance, which at this point is a mere million rand, and the annual or your annual foreign investment allowance, which is 10 million, which I'm sure is everything that you guys have available to you. The Saab does reserve the right to require approval, also to investigate and to look into the particular transactions, and for you to provide your tax clearance certificates. And beware of utilising any offshore international exchanges. You may run into issues there in terms of utilising the allowance that you have. So, actually, before I get onto that, I want to read you something. So this comes from Tech Central, and it talks to how the blockchain could secure our identities, and it was printed on the 29th of April of this year. Talks to the risks of exponential data. The digital world's data content is estimated at billions of terabytes or zettabytes. I hadn't heard that word before. 90% of which has been created since 2016. Information is an increasingly valuable commodity, and its acquisition, analysis, and trade play an important role across industries. And with one quarter, I'll repeat, one quarter of the world's population using Facebook every month in 2017, a lot of this data is personal. In 2013 and 2014, 3 billion Yahoo accounts were hacked in what was the highest profile digital identity breach at the time. In South Africa, more than 30 million identity numbers and other associated financial information was leaked online only last year. So the regulators have stepped in, but we are still waiting for Poppy. Stunning revelations surrounding Facebook sharing up to 87 million members' data to a third party, being Cambridge Analytica, allegedly for academic purposes, caused shockwaves across the world, wiping $100 billion off its market capitalization and leading some analysts to speculate around fines that could amount to $2 trillion, which is 100 times larger than the biggest corporate fine in history. So personal data is an economic asset generated by the identities and the behaviors of individuals, and the monetization potential of the use or the misuse is astounding. Services like messaging, search, and navigation may appear free, but they come at a cost. Your personal data, or perhaps more aptly called your consumer data, because, and please remember this, if you are not paying, you are not the consumer, you're the product. The question of how to verify, secure, and manage identity and personal data online is more pertinent today than ever before. So we go to Poppy. Effective date is still pending. The intention is to safeguard personal information of a data subject when information is processed by a responsible person. Clients say to me, well, what happens if I don't feel like being a responsible person, then do I fall out of this? No, sorry, the definition of responsible person is extremely broad. And you will find that despite wanting to be irresponsible, you will have to be responsible. The lawful processing of personal information requires 8 conditions to be fulfilled, only one of which is consent. The European GDPR has now been published, and that is quite stringent in terms of its regulations. One of the things that it does allow for is allows an individual, and also just bear in mind that Poppy applies to natural persons or individuals, not companies, it allows an individual to call for the deletion of their data once it is no longer required for the transaction in question. Given the fact that the blockchain technology creates immutable transactions, which means that they cannot be altered or changed, how is this then going to fit in? I don't think I need to go into too much detail about FICA, sanctions, and POCA. Clearly, I mean, there have been very many instances of where cyber crimes have occurred. Dealing in terms of sanctioned countries is going to get you sanctioned in terms of penalties and fines. Your money may be lost, you may not see it again. And in terms of FaZe, just be aware that if anyone conducts any business that falls within the definition of financial advisory or intermediary services, you are strictly regulated by the FSCA, which is previously the FSB, as I mentioned, and you do require licenses. The Financial Markets Act has clearly said that the cryptocurrency is not recognized as a security, so it cannot be used as collateral. So what a and how do we manage that at this particular point in time? Banks Act and the collective investment schemes, this I think is, could be potentially problematic for a number of people. A business that collects and pools fees for blockchain transactions and or accepts deposits for investment into cryptocurrencies and your initial coin offerings might be considered to be a collective investment scheme and or is conducting the business of a bank as it's accepting deposits from the general public, amongst other things, and they are heavily regulated by the FSCA and the SARB, again, licensing requirements. Consumer Protection Act, this gives us an indication as to what a Ponzi scheme is. Any scheme that offers 20% above the repo rate is a multiplication scheme, so watch out. The ECTA, we have a look at this, and again, does your contract or your transaction actually exist? Do you know who the counterparty is? Do you know when your offer was accepted, if it was accepted, and how it was accepted, where it was accepted? Companies Act, beware of ICOs. They might be considered as an offer of securities to the public. The USA has confirmed, as Alan alluded to, that an ICO is an offer of securities to the public, which means that you need to comply with all the prospectus regulations. Cybercrimes and cybersecurity bill, we definitely need this to come into effect. Here we deal with issues such as phishing attacks. I didn't know what spear phishing was. Does anyone here know what spear phishing is or happy to venture an answer? Spear phishing is effectively cold calling you or sending you information allegedly from a reputable source. So it could be from an exchange through whom you've already dealt, asking for your information. It's fantastic, and people disclose. Investment scams, they're cloud mining scams, they're multi-level marketing scams and Bitcoin doublers. There's no such thing, guys. High-yield programs such as your Ponzi schemes, your 51% tax. This is particularly relevant in the enterprise chains, blockchains, where you have a 51% attack on the nodes. There's collusion and all sorts of corruption, malware installed on the computers, and effectively they can create consensus at 51%. Market manipulation, such as spoofing and wash trading, some very interesting things, the way to drive the price of the cryptocurrency up or to drive it down for your own benefit. And then these drive-by attacks and cryptojacking, this is real, guys, please, just bear in mind. So if you cruise around on the internet and you click on any of the ads, particularly those that like to go into the porn sites and see all the nice dancing ladies on the side, please be careful or go and do any form of online gambling. They can hijack your device, and they can utilize your device to mine cryptocurrency without you even knowing it. So the way to determine this, obviously, would be to chat to your gurus, your IT gurus, and also if your CPU is completely drained, you might want to have a look at that as to the reason why. The other thing that you can also detect this through is through the utilization of data. So if your data costs all of a sudden jump, beware, you may well have been hacked. So, know your investment. If you're going to get involved in anything on blockchain and you're going to do any form of investment, check out badbitcoin.org. That's where I like to go. They've got a naughty list. I've put it here as a bad list because I can't write naughty lists and give it away, with over 5,000 domains, and they are growing every day. And they have a safe list of good characters that are operating on blockchain. I'm not going to go through all the various jurisdictions. I will point out one or two very interesting ones, though. In Sierra Leone, they use blockchain technology for their most recent presidential and parliamentary elections, and it was a huge success. Indonesia is now, the regulator has given the green light for the establishment of a crypto futures exchange. In Belarus, this is awesome. They embrace blockchain technology, cryptocurrency is legal, ICOs are recognized, and the proceeds from transactions are tax-free for 5 years. And then there is also Singapore, which is also making some headlines and waves in terms of recognizing and finding ways for ICOs to be safe. Use cases, music industry. You can go onto Mycelia and you can buy music directly from the artists. They've disintermediated the houses and all the production companies there. much cheaper. The mining industry, we have Everledger that is used to track diamonds to make sure that they're not blood or conflict diamonds. This also can give you an indication as to the nature of the diamond from the time that it was mined up until the last form of ownership. Can be used in voting in the form of elections. Strafe's also having a look at the possibility of voting via blockchain on securities. Supply chain management, manufacturing in the retail sectors, this is a huge area of focus. One of my directors, who happens to be sitting here, gave me a very nice article to read about Walmart and what they did in terms of trying to source the origin of mangoes. And when they did it manually or through the usual technology, it took them almost 7 days. When they utilized blockchain technology, it took them 2.2 seconds. Healthcare is also another one I think that's worth mentioning. The filling in of all those hospital records is extremely irritating and annoying, and now you do get apps that allow your doctors to see all your medical records. Well, what happens if you're going to see one specialist and you don't necessarily want them to see information that you've been to see other specialists? As a woman, I don't particularly want my gynecological information to be disclosed to my ENT. I don't think it's relevant. So this, on blockchain, I think this would be able to give us a way of actually controlling the information that is disclosed to various parties for how long and for what reason. The insurance industry is also having a look at blockchain. This would be a way that you could lodge your claims and have your claims paid. Also will create a history on you. Syndicated loans, trade finance, capital markets, collateral, auditing firms, watch out, auditing firms. You can now, and it is possible to do an audit via the blockchain. It's open source, you can have a look at the transactions. Even if it's private, you can also have a look to see exactly what has happened on that chain. Smart cities, definitely not a place I'm gonna go. I'm a Big Brother, have Big Brother concerns or conspiracy theorists. Here they do give you, you go and set up, it's particularly popular in France right now, it's under discussion, and they're going to set up a smart city where your water use, your electricity use, every single public utility that you utilize, your driving, everything is monitored, and you are then rewarded in tokens or cash back. And I think the use cases for places like SIPSI, DEES registry, municipalities, and intellectual property registers, I think that'll be really fantastic if we can put those onto the blockchain. So some developments, as mentioned by Coral earlier, Project Corker was launched by the Saab. Huge success thus far, but they will only revert with their ultimate findings in August. It was with South Africa's 6 biggest banks, and it also included Discovery Bank, and that was to test drive blockchain technology with interbank payments. What happened was that they found that payments that would normally take them over a day to settle, they could do in 2 hours. The Saab's also exploring the need for the central bank to issue its own digital currency. And Signia has indicated that it's going to start a cryptocurrency exchange called Signia Coin sometime this year, well, the third quarter of this year. And that's all from my side. Thanks, guys.